Welcome and hello, everybody, and welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Teddy, and I'm an alcoholic, and I will be your host for the month of June. So this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday here at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on aagrapevine.org, and on our YouTube channel. This is an open meeting, and everyone is welcome. We're glad that you're all here, especially any newcomers that have joined us today. If you are new and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. And you can use the meeting guide app for that if you don't have it already. Contact with group members will help you find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. And this is today's daily quote from the AA Grapevine. He said, looking for it on his phone. there we are. Okay. So June 3rd, 2026. Living sober is not all roses all the time. But the cool thing is, when I'm nervous, it is okay. I do not have to fix a drink. It is the same with being sad, worried, or afraid. And now, this is a quote from this month's AA Grapevine magazine. And I'm going to read one of the Dear Grapevine letters that we have. And this letter is from Jim in Tasmania. If you wonder where Tasmania is, it's the little island. Actually, it's quite a big island, but it looks little in comparison to Australia. It's just on the southeastern tip of Australia. And this letter is called Simple But Not Effortless. I was at a meeting recently where the topic was whether or not staying sober was easy. It hit me there are at least two meanings for easy, simple and effortless. It is simple. There are no hidden meanings in the steps, and we only need to try to work them as well as we can. I can be the kind of person who looks for deep insight into the obvious and get in my own way when trying to work the steps. Easy can also mean effortless, and staying sober is far from that. I've been sober a long time, but I still feel the need to get to meetings, pray, try to live in harmony with the steps, and do the next right thing. I don't need to do all that just to stay sober, but I do need to do them to live a sane, happy, and meaningful life. Meetings help me to see things as they are, maintain positive and healthy attitudes, spend time with people I can relate to and feel comfortable with, and keep my thinking straight. I need to maintain my recovery so I can enjoy life. If someone is trying to just do enough to stay dry, they will eventually find it's a tricky business. Doing 90% of what it takes to stay sober would eventually get me drunk for sure. And that's some advice there from Jim in Tasmania. And also today, we're going to read a little bit from the AA Big Book. And we are going to read my favorite quote from the Big Book, which you can find on page 19 in the chapter, There Is a Solution. And what this says is, most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions and attitudes, which makes us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers will depend on our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. So, this will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. So I would like to introduce our first speaker today, who is my good friend, Jersey Jeff. Take it away, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Teddy. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much. I love that letter from Jim. You know, I never thought about it easy. The quote that I always think about is, you know, this is a simple program for complicated people, and we can certainly complicate it. But I never thought about easy being simple versus effortless. And as he points out, this is a program of action, and we need to take action every day to work all the 36 principles in this program. So I loved it. Thank you so much, Teddy, and for asking me to share here today on my experience, strength, and hope with the Grapevine. I have to tell you, I am very prejudiced. I am in love with the Grapevine and have been for quite a while, as you'll see from my story. So just a bit of background. My sobriety date is August 1st, 2003. My home group is the AA home group. It's an online home group. We are a 24/7 meeting. We have 22 meetings a day, 7 days a week. And during those 7 days during the week, there are probably four or five different Grapevine meetings that are held. I run one of them myself. More about that a little bit later. From a service position, I have been in general service for quite a while. I'll talk a little bit about that as I go through my story. I'm coming up on 23 years of sobriety on August 1st, and it has been a wild, crazy ride for me. It's been one of the best things that I've ever done in my life, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has saved my life, but more than that, it has taught me how to live a good life, right? And so let me start back. 2003, my AA venture begins. In March of 2003, I get my second drunk driving conviction. I got my first about 9 years prior to that, but I had always been drinking and hopped into a car and driven, right? 2003 caught me for a second time. I lost my license for 2 years and didn't get any penalties back then. If it had happened today, I would have gotten 6 months in jail to begin with, right? But I didn't get any jail time for the second one. For the third one, which occurred about 3 or 4 months after that, I had kept the first one going to trial. And then eventually I get my third one before the second one even went to trial. Right. For my third one, I come before the judge, and the judge offers me two options. He says, you know, Jeff, you can go to jail for 90 days, or you can go off to rehab. For every day that you're in rehab, I'll take 1 day off of a 90-day sentence. And then when you come out, for every 3 AA meetings you go to, I'll take another day off of that 90-day sentence, right? I worked it out later on. He was trying to get me to do a 90 and 90, right? I took the second option because the only thing I knew about jail is bad bologna sandwiches and being careful in the shower. So I never wanted to go off to jail. So I took what I thought was the easier, softer way. I said, I'll take the rehab and AA. So I went off to a rehab. I was in rehab for 2 weeks, right? And as I was getting out of rehab, they made me make a list of the AA meetings that I was going to be at in the next 7 days. They had a meeting. They had a meeting booklet from Area 44, Northern New Jersey, where I lived and went to meetings. It was pre meeting guide app, so you couldn't just look them up on the meeting guide. They actually had a physical booklet, which were very handy because when I started going to meetings, when newcomers would show up, on the back, it had a place where you could put their phone numbers. So we would give people a meeting book that showed them where they could go, and it had meeting numbers on the back, right? So I got out of rehab on a Saturday after being in there for 2 weeks. I went to my first AA meeting. I couldn't wait to get to a meeting because I didn't really know what to expect. I knew that I couldn't keep living the way that I was living, working during the day, drinking at night, you know, coming home drunk, not really being able to have any time for my wife or my stepson or families or friends or anything, right? So I knew I couldn't continue to live that way, but I had no idea, you know, what it was going to take for me to live differently. So I go to my first meeting. It's on a Saturday night, 8 p.m., one town over from where I live. And my wife dropped me off, and I walk up to the door, and there are two people standing at the door. I hear people in the background in the meeting itself laughing. One of them says hello to me. They greet me. They say, hey, are you new here? I don't recognize you. And I said, well, yeah, I just got out of a rehab 8 hours ago. And they said, oh, you're in the right place. Come on in. They walked me over to the coffee, gave me a cup of coffee and a donut. They said, just sit down and relax and listen, right? You give me a cup of coffee and I'm your friend for life, right? So I sat down and the meeting started, and they found out that I was there and it was my first AA meeting. They had brought meetings into my rehab, but they were just speaker meetings. I don't consider those to be my first meetings. This was the first AA meeting that I went to. And when they found out that I was a newcomer and this was my first meeting, they took that meeting and made it into a first step meeting, right? And they told me four things. They said, you know, if you're going to stay sober, do the following. Go to a lot of meetings. Okay, that's good. I got my list. I got my where I'm going to be for the next 7 days, right? They said, work the steps. Oh, the steps. Those are the things that I see on the window shade up on the wall. You know, if you're in an online meeting, you haven't experienced that. But in an in-person meeting, they've got the steps, the traditions, and hopefully the concepts all on these window shades up on the wall, right? So, okay, those are them. I got that, right? And then they said, get a home group, get a sponsor, right? I had no idea what a home group was or what a sponsor was, but I would later learn, right? But going to a lot of meetings, that I could do. I was court ordered to meetings, so you know, I had to do meetings until I satisfied those. But I got to tell you, that first year, right, if I missed three meetings all year, it was a lot. I was afraid to miss a meeting. That was the good kind of fear that Bill talks about. But, you know, the other thing that I learned later on is that people who get out of a rehab, you know, or get out of a facility, if they go to an AA meeting the first day that they get out of that meeting, their chances of staying sober improve incredibly, right? And so I was really blessed to be able to get to my first meeting on as soon as I got out of rehab. So I continued to go to meetings. And 2 days later on Monday, I went to the Monday night meeting that was on my list. And it was a step and traditions meeting. Great meeting. It was a large meeting when I first got there, and it was run by two guys named Bill and Bob, right? Which I thought later on was quite amusing. And the Bill of the Bill and Bob pair, a guy named Bill B, had over 50 years of sobriety, and he went to meetings with Bill W. in Northern Jersey, and some of the tales that he had about Bill W. were quite incredible, right? So at that meeting, when the meeting was over, I needed a ride home. My wife had dropped me off. She said, "Look, Jeff, you're going to not drive for 12 years. You better start finding rides to meetings, right?" So I told her I'd find a ride home. So I went up to the guy who was leading the meeting, Tim, and I said, "Tim, I need a ride home. So he yells out to the people who are still left, "Hey, can anybody give this guy a ride home?" Right? And my buddy Carl said, "Yeah, I can probably give you a ride home. Where do you live?" I said, "Well, I live over in Southbound Brook." He goes, "Yeah, so do I." Right? So I made my first AA friend. Carl has been a great friend, probably my oldest AA friend, my closest AA friend, just friend in general, dragged me around to meetings for the next 5 years, was there when I celebrated my 90 days. Carl had 18 years of sobriety when I first met him that night. Next Monday, at that same meeting, the same Step in Tradition meeting, he'll be which is his home group, and has been all this time. He'll be celebrating 40 years, so I'll be there to see him get his 40-year coin. Right. I don't do a lot of in-person meetings. I'm more of an online kind of guy these days, but I go to that meeting from time to time. Right. So that meeting also is the way that I was introduced to the Grapevine. So a couple of weeks later, I'm at the Monday night meeting. I'm there a little bit early, right? And I'm looking around, and there's literature on the table, right? A approved literature. They had big books. They had pamphlets. And there are these magazines called The Grapevine, right? Didn't know what they were, right? So I said, "Hey, Tim, what are these Grapevine things?" He says, "Well, The Grapevine, it's our meeting in print, and our group has two subscriptions a month, right? We get a new issue every month, and we give them out to people. You can take one home, read it, and when you're done with it, bring it back," right? I said, "Okay." So I picked one of them up, right? A couple of days later, right? Now I'm new in sobriety, and I'm really struggling to stay sober and not pick up a drink. You know, life is happening. My wife is all pissed off at me. My kids don't want to talk to me. I got that unmanageability thing down, right? But I look at the first step, and it says that I'm powerless over alcohol. And I know that I've got to do the first step perfectly. I cannot pick up a drink, not when I'm feeling this way, not to make myself feel better, not to deal with any of the problems I had. So one morning, it's like 2:30 in the morning, right? And I can't sleep. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, as the big book tells us, right? It's 2:30. Can't call my sponsor. Can't call another alcoholic, right? I didn't know enough alcoholics in California those days. I didn't know my buddy Teddy, or I could have called him. But I didn't know what to do. And then I remembered I had picked up this Grapevine book, right? And so I found it, and I started reading some of the stories, right? And I was just blown away, you know, people telling their stories. One guy pretty much told my story exactly, right? And in the other stories, I could really relate to the emotions and the feelings that came up. Nobody at that point in time had told me, you know, don't compare yourself to other alcoholics, you know, relate to this, to the feelings that their particular story engenders, their experience, strength, and hope. And I sat there and I read that Grapevine for the next 4 hours until the sun came up. Started a love for the Grapevine that continues to this day. Right. So the next day, I took the subscription card that was in that Grapevine, sent it in, and got my first subscription to the Grapevine. And now, almost 23 years later, I've always had a subscription to the Grapevine. Now, I love getting the Grapevine in the mail, right? You know, so I love taking it with me. I love being able to read it wherever I am. But I'm also a big fan of the app, right? And I was really grateful when the app came out. I downloaded it on my Droid, right? And I subscribed also electronically. So I get a print subscription. I get an electronic subscription. I love the story archive, so I can get on my computer, pull up any story, and I'll talk about how I use that a little bit later. But now if I go to a meeting and somebody mentions they're going to read a story from the grapevine and they say when it's from, I just get onto the story archive on my phone and I read along with the story on the phone. I was very blessed in another respect. At about 2 months sober, I was going to a Sunday morning home group, start the day right in New Brunswick. One day I walked in and they were handing out tickets. I said, "What's this for?" And they said, "Oh, we're giving away passes to the Area 44 convention." And I said, "Okay." I took my ticket and I sat down. Didn't know what a convention was, but in those days, I didn't want to appear like I didn't know things, so I didn't ask. Right. So I sat there with my ticket. There's this big meeting, 65 people in the meeting, and I'm not a lucky guy. Right. So I said, "Oh, there's no way that I'm going to win this pass to the convention." Of course, my higher power intervened and my name was the first one pulled from the hat and I went a pass to this convention. Right. So it was in 3 weeks from that time. So I went on a Saturday, didn't have my kids that weekend. And when I didn't have my kids, I was a little bit bored, right? And the last thing that an alcoholic in early sobriety needs is to be bored. So I said, okay, so I'll go to this convention thing and see what it's all about, right? So I go to the convention and they hand me a schedule and I look down the schedule. Oh, it's a conference. Okay, I went to computer conferences. I know what that's all about, right? So I went in and I looked down and there was a talk, sponsorship in the literature. I still didn't have a sponsor. I'm 2 months sober. I didn't know what a sponsor was. So I went to the talk of this woman. Her name was Terry P. So Terry basically talks about what a sponsor is. Now I got an idea. But I got there early and she said, "Hey, do you like to help out?" I said, "Yeah, sure I do," right? She says, "Well, stay after my talk and we could use your help." So after the talk, she takes me upstairs. And at the Area 44 conventions, Northern New Jersey, we have a literature room. They're selling conference-approved literature. There's an AA Grapevine table. There's even an Al-Anon table with literature there. She says, "We need people here to man this room during hours that the convention's open. Do you think you can help out?" I said, "Sure," right? I ended up spending the whole weekend in that literature room. I went down from time to time to listen to the speakers, right? And I started looking through the pamphlets. I found out, oh, we even have a pamphlet on sponsorship, questions and answers on sponsorship. I looked and I didn't have a 12 and 12 at the time. I picked one of those up, right? And then at the end of the meeting, you know, at the end of the weekend, Terry thanked me for helping them and say, "Hey, look, why don't you come down and help us out? We meet on the third Thursday of the month, the Area Literature Committee." And I said, "Well, Terry, I would come, but I don't drive. I don't have a car." She goes, "No problem. We'll come pick you up." Right. And she did. And so here I am, 2 months sober, working at the Area Literature Committee. Right. And that started a service for me. She took me around. I went to days of sharing, to assemblies, to our work weekend, and I got to see what service in Alcoholics Anonymous was all about, right? A few months later, I ended up at a district meeting for the first time at 4 months sober, right? At 6 months sober, I became the district literature chair for District 35 in Area 44, and I brought a district to the literature to the district meetings, conference-approved literature, meeting guidebooks from intergroup. If it had been today, I would have also brought AA literature, but they had a district grapevine rep that didn't really get filled very often. I'd have brought grapevine literature to that meeting as well. Right? I continued to serve. I served at the district level. I became the DCM a couple of years later. And when I rotated out as DCM, I became a district grapevine chair because they never were filling that position. So that was a great position for me. I would bring grapevine literature. I would go down. The Area 44 Grapevine Committee met on a monthly basis. And Grapevine reps would come, share what's going on in their groups and their districts. And then I would get Grapevine literature, take it back to the district, sell it to the groups. I would have subscriptions. I would tell groups, you need to take these back to your group and get subscriptions. So I served as the district Grapevine rep for a couple of years as well, right? Moving on, I moved on to into area service. I became newsletter chair and website chair for a couple of rotations. And then I became an area officer, which I served at for 13 years, right? I did most of the area positions, served as recording secretary, became area chair for 2 years. That was quite an honor and a privilege and a lot of work. And then in 2018 at the election assembly, I was elected as the delegate for my area in Northern New Jersey, right? And when you're a delegate, you take over January 1st. One of the first things that you're looking to hear about is what committee am I going to be put on and serve on at the conference, right? Well, I was overjoyed when I found out that my conference committee was going to be the Grapevine Committee, right? And so I served 2 years on the Grapevine Committee. That first year, we had some interesting issues to deal with. We talked about about alcoholism pages, and we which had come up. They're also called the gray pages, and we were able to come to a conclusion as to how they could stay in but be under editorial control of the Grapevine. Right? At that conference, I was elected as the chair of my committee. So in the second year, I served as the conference chair for Grapevine. Teddy was another one of those chairs. I got to go to a board weekend. I also was able to influence some of the items that came to the Grapevine Committee by attending the Grapevine board meeting, right? I was very excited about our second meeting, but then the pandemic hit, right? And we couldn't get to do a lot of the things that we wanted to, right? But it was a great experience serving at the conference. Since rotating out as delegate, I've had various things to serve and help the Grapevine. For about 3 years, I ran a Grapevine working group for the Grapevine Lavinian Magazine working group. We did a lot of work about informing people about the Grapevine, did some great videos. I've run a Grapevine workshops in the interim. I did one in my new area, Area 03, Arizona, where I spend my winters. Of late, I've started running a Grapevine meeting at 10 o'clock at night, Eastern time, on my home group, the aahomegroup.org. And it's great. We use the Grapevine as a 12-step tool, right? The first week of the month, we read articles from the new issue. The second week of the month, I go through the story archive and pick a topic. The third week of the month, I use it and bring up history articles out of the Grapevine. And then on the fourth week of the month, we look at what the step, tradition, and concept articles out of the Grapevine are as well. So the Grapevine is a great tool. I absolutely love it. And I'm glad that you allowed me to come here today, Teddy, to share my experience, strength, and hope. And the Grapevine has certainly been an important part of my recovery, part of the fellowship, and part of my service work. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for being, such a pattern of service. I really, really inspire me, and I look up to you. And it was such a joy getting to serve with you when we had that opportunity, and continuing today. in service, it's where, as well as the fellowship, but particularly in service, where I've met, my lifelong friends and fellow travelers on this path of happy destiny. And I love when you were talking about, looking for the similarities. And it reminded me, because it's fresh in my mind, there's another really great Grapevine book called Our 12 Steps. And what I love about the Grapevine books, particularly with people who have been sober for a little while and are familiar with the 12 and 12 and the big book is that we get to dive into these books together and read them together. And there's this beautiful story in step five in our 12 steps. It's the last one. It's called Just Listening. The woman goes to do a fifth step with someone she's never met before, and I'm really worried for her. But anyway, no spoilers, but there's a happy ending to that story. And in it, she says, "Soon I realized that her pain was the same as mine. Our pain had been brought about by only slightly different circumstances. Apart from the details, we were the same."
Wow. And very powerful stuff.
Kind of a theme today. Anyway, like I said, on this path of happy destiny, you know, I get to meet incredible people and lifelong friends. And so with that, that's a really good segue to my really good friend, Raimundo L, who is going to be our second speaker today. But before that, I have a few announcements. Actually, I have several announcements. The South tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area, your district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet, which Jeff mentioned, called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it at aa.org. Grapevine doesn't accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support the Grapevine and Lavinia is, of course, to subscribe to either of the magazines in print, online, or on the apps, which is where you able to carry it around in your back pocket. You can subscribe by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can also subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine or, you know, Lavinia on the App Store on your iPhone. You can also purchase the Grapevine books, which we've referenced. There's many of them, greeting cards and other items at your local AA central office. By doing so, you'll be able to support both Grapevine and your local central office. And you can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. We also have the Grapevine Carry the Message project, which allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or loners stuck at home. So again, please visit aagrapevine.org and click on the Carry the Message button to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and at aagrapevine.org. You can also check out our primary purpose, which is the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in now to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. So for all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all the episodes. And please remember, finally, to follow Grapevine on Instagram and Lavinia on Instagram and YouTube as well. And so now that's all the announcements we have for today. And I'm going to turn it over to my good friend, Raimundo.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Raimundo. I am an alcoholic. And I thank you, Teddy, for allowing me to be of service this morning. For me, it's like a recharge. You know, I'm here in Mexico. I came to visit for 2 weeks, and I'm here with my granddaughter. And, you know, it's a blessing for me to be here. You know, I was born here, and when I came to live to this place, well, not to this place, it's a little house that I bought, but I'm like 3-4 houses down is where I was born, where I moved to when I was 3 months old. My father bought a lot there and then they built a house. And, you know, I raised here. This is the you know, my neighborhood where I was raised. The first time I ever got in contact with alcoholism is because my father used to drink. And when I was about 12 years old, my brother, he passed away from alcoholism. He was 20 years old. It was a big hit to our families because, I mean, he was 20 years old and he was having all these problems. And on 1976, on that year, three things happened that really hit our family. On the 16th of January, my brother passes away. On March 14, my father found Alcoholics Anonymous here in Guadalajara. And in September, I started drinking. I was 12 years old. I was a witness of what, you know, happened within my family. And something was greater than that, that I couldn't really get along with people. I felt like I didn't belong. I felt like this was like too much for me. It was really hard for me to live. I mean, it was like, I don't know. It was so hard for me to get along with people. I wasn't good for school. And when I started drinking when I was 12 years old, something changed. You know, something changed. I'm a blackout drinker. The very first time I got to get drunk, I don't remember what happened. I came home and I don't remember. And I was 12 years old. And my father got so mad that, you know, in a way, my mother, in the next morning, she was waking me up, stating that, hey, you have to wake up. You have to go to school. And I'm like trying to not make any noise because my father was really, 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 I mean, upset about me, you know, because me getting drunk at 12 years old. And that was the first time I got my first hangover. The next day, I mean, I'm like, just keep on throwing up. And then I was only 17 years old. I ended up in a mental hospital from an overdose. You know, I mean, I was drinking too much. I mean, I don't even know how I got to the hospital. I remember telling my dad, there's something wrong with me. You know, it's like, I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong with me. You know, I cannot sleep at night. I get too nervous. I hear voices. It's too much for me, you know? And my dad was already going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's like, you know, come to the meetings. I said, no, but I'm not an alcoholic. I don't think that's my problem. Because I was resentful of my dad. Because he used to drink and what happened, you know? things escalated, you know? It got worse and worse and worse. I used to do a lot. I couldn't help it. I tried so many times to stop on my own. And I just couldn't, you know, it was like, it was just too much for me, you know? So I have to go to the States when I was 18 years old. And then I'm like, it was too much. I went to the States thinking that things are going to get better. I promised myself as soon as I cross the border, I'm not going to drink no more. But when I got to LA, you know, my brother started like playing pool and he started winning. And the first thing hey, get a bottle of whiskey for my brother. And I said, oh, but I promise I wasn't going to drink anymore. But then it was too much for me. You know, it's really hard when you're an alcoholic, you know, when you're young and you want to succeed in life, you want to do things, but it's too hard. There's something inside of you that doesn't allow you to do things, you know? And that was my problem. It was so hard for me, you know? And I started drinking again. I went four years more. When I was 22, you know, I'm like, I had to do something about it. This is too much for me. I'm going crazy. I crashed my car. I almost died. I used to get this sleep paralysis, you know, and I'm like, I knew I was going to die. I was certain that I was going to die when I turned 23. I knew that was going to happen. I was certain on that. So then one time I was talking to my mom on the phone and she said, mijo, you got to do something. And I'm like, I used to go see some lady in Mexico, a healer. And she was helping me for a little bit, but then, you know, it was too much. She couldn't help me no more. And then my dad, he got mad at me. And he told my mom, hey, tell him to go to AA, to stop messing around. He needs to go to AA. And then I said, no, I'm okay. But I got to the point that I knew that was the answer. Because I saw my father recover. My Alcoholics Anonymous changed my dad around, you know, big time. I knew that was the answer, but something inside of me was not allowing me to do that. But then one time I decided to call because I ended up on the streets. I lost everything, you know, everything. Nobody wanted me around. And I used to stay at this basement. And on this basement, one time, I've noticed there was a bit of TV that hardly worked. And this TV, there was an announcement. That's why I love AA so much. Because there's a public service announcement, you know, talking to me. And I call. But then, you know, that other side of me, like, I want to go to AA, but at the same time, something is stopping me. Because I call and they call back. When they call back, they say, no, he's not home. Just, you know, leave a message. That happened several times. Till one time I said, no, this is it. I talked to somebody. He became my sponsor. I went there and just the way he talked to me, you know, I felt like for the first time, somebody understands what I'm going on, what is going on with me, you know? I feel like I belong. But my illness was so strong that 2 weeks after, I drank again. And I feel so embarrassed because I found the answer. But at the same time, you know, I felt like I fail like always, you know, because I fail in a lot of things. But then I go back and then I started my new journey, you know. The best journey of my life. 3 months later, I got a job, you know, as a bartender. I used to be a bartender. I found a job and I work at nights. So I was going to the meeting from 1 to 3. And 3 months later, they asked if anybody was willing to serve from the meeting from 1 to 3. The meetings, Spanish meetings are 2 hours. And I said, and nobody was willing to take this service. And I got scared because I'm like, can you imagine what it means from somebody who drinks every single day to stop drinking for 3 months? And nobody was willing to share that meeting for the next 3 months, for the next 6 months. It was for 6 months. And then I raised my hand. And then they looked at me like, but he's only 3 months. He cannot be, you know, the secretary of this meeting. But nobody was willing. So it took like 2 hours on the business meeting to decide if I get the, you know, the position or not. So I got the position. And then I found out very, how could I say this? But if I found out the key of Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave me the key because I have to open up the place. But at the same time, I could say is that I found out the key of Alcoholics Anonymous is the service, do service. I want to make this story long short because, you know, I served for the first 10 years in a lot of different services. One time, I started going to District 40, Santa Clara South. I started serving there. And one of the things that really got my attention, it was Sarah. Sarah used to give these beautiful reports. These reports were about the grapevine. Back then, the Lavinia wasn't around. And one time I said, I want to do what Sarah does. I want to make those reports. And next thing you know, as the time went by, because I started as a coffee maker for the district, I was doing those reports. I never thought I could be a DCMC, you know, and a district committee member chair. And I got this position. I feel so good about this. It's like every service commitment, it makes you feel like you could do that. It makes you feel like for the first time in your life, you're doing something good for others, but at the same time, you're doing it for yourself. That happened in 2008. I got to go to Alaska. Can you imagine a drunk from the streets of San Jose going to Alaska? And my district was paying for that. When I was on the plane, I will never forget this. I saw all this white spot, you know? And my head started thinking, I wondered how people, Alcoholics Anonymous, can bring the message to Alaska, you know? And then when we got to Alaska, that PRASA, the Pacific region, Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly, I saw this lady that came from one of the islands. She didn't speak the language, but she had somebody translated for her. And she was saying that she was about to give up. But because she came to this assembly, you know, she decided that to put more input in Alcoholics Anonymous, she was going to go back to her island and share, you know, about what she saw, about what she heard, about what she felt. Then, you know, I started serving. And then next thing you know, I thought that was it. Because usually I'm like, well, I'm DCM. I mean, I'm DCNC. And I think, so basically, my sponsor said, you make yourself available. You raise your hand. Allow the assembly to decide for you. So I raised my hand and I went to the hat. And I was picked out of the hat as a literature Grapevine Lavinia chair. And that was another journey for me, you know. Somebody came from Bolivia and asked me that if I want to come to the Redella, the meeting of the Americas, you know, it was going to be in Peru. And I would say, yes, I'll go. I want to go and bring, you know, some of the Lavinia over there. And I was already getting ready for that. But I didn't have the money. And one time said, hey, are you going to go or not? Because, you know, we have to pay for the tickets. And I didn't have the money. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I was in Cupertino driving my car. And some ladies came in rear-ending me really good. Then, you know, I was like in the middle of the street and then checking my neck, but I'm okay. And then I'm like, I said, I wonder how much I'm going to get for this, you know? So they gave me $2,000 to fix my car. I used the money to go to Bolivia, you know, to Peru. And that was one of the wonderful experiences I had. I went it's not something that I have to do, but I decided to go. So I have to pay it on my own. I don't get financed for that. So I went over there. Oh my God. It was a wonderful experience. I got to meet Joanne and I got to meet Dan. Was with a bunch of people there. I went and asked him, hey, do you need any help translating? And he goes, no, Raimundo, we're not speaking either English or Spanish. We're speaking the language of the heart, you know? At the end of the event, he gave me his banner. Each country gets this banner. He gave me his banner. And his banner was all signed. And he said, Raimundo, here, bring this back to your area. Share with your area what you saw, what you heard, especially what you felt, you know? It was like, this experience has got me more involved. I got the opportunity to go to Cuba. I was a person, Lavinia's over there, you know, because Lavinia became my passion, you know? I want to say something before I continue. I used to read the Grapevine. And one time I was reading the Grapevine around 1991, something like that. And I was reading an article in Spanish in the Grapevine. I just remember that somehow. And the Grapevine for me was like, how can I say this? because we had the great mind back then, ever since, you know, came to AA in 1986. Actually, Miss Rite Aid is September 22nd, 1986. And we wanted the great mind in Spanish, you know. And there was the National Convention of AA, and they had this request or proposal to have the great mind translated to Spanish. You know, I mean, I have a full presentation of how many people were asking, you know, to have the great mind translated to Spanish. So when I was laying down and I was reading the great mind, I've noticed that there was an article in Spanish. So anyway, I would like to share about Lavinia because that's basically what I've been serving on. I went to Cuba. I mean, I went to a lot of places. And then we started doing, workshops, getting people involved. And I started, I think like 2 years later, we started the anniversary of Lavinia. And this coming July is going to be the 30th anniversary of Lavinia in Seattle, Washington. So every anniversary, I've been attending every anniversary, you know. I've been like participating with doing this workshops. And then I became the registrar for the area. Then I came out of the hat as a chair for the area. And the last, I was also picked out of the hat as a delegate. So unfortunately, my time is up. I'm sorry. I knew that was going to happen. I tried to make the long story short, but this is the best I could. I love you guys. That's how I met you, all of you. I feel like I'm home. And I thank you so much for allowing me to be of service. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Raimundo. And it's been, one of the amazing gifts of sobriety for me to tread this road together with you and to serve as we did as area officers together. And then to kind of witness, you know, the beautiful way in which you rotated but continued to be of maximum service, just like Jeff, and really taking the grapevine and Lavinia and the message of AA and the message of recovery and the magic of the 12 steps to all the places and people that you have. So thank you, and thank you for such a moving and beautiful share. I was with you when you were talking about how nobody wanted to be around you and you were on the streets and at that point of, utter despair. And here we all are. And that's all due to the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you all for being here wherever you are this afternoon, this morning. And please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends and family who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. So please keep that in mind if you're doing cooperation with the professional community work or if you're also doing public information service in AA. So now we've reached the time where we're going to close the meeting. And so what I would like to do would be to invite Jeff to close the meeting today with a prayer of your choice, Jeff.
Well, thank you so much, Teddy. It was a great hearing, Raimundo, and thank you for all the service you do and the service of the Grapevines of Fellowship. I like to close meetings that are focused on things like service with the Responsibility Declaration. Okay. So, Teddy, I have a question for you. Who's responsible?
I am
responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help,
out.
I want the hand of AA always to be there.
To be there.
And for that, I am responsible.
You're responsible.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Jeff and Raimundo, again for your amazing shares today. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. And happy 24 hours to everybody.